New year, same us, Sports Bar Podcast. It's Scott Manzi and Alex Turco, and we're back with another episode of the Sports Bar Podcast.
Drinking
I'm here in 2021 with Scott in the Ice Mule Cooler Studios. I wish you were with me. Unfortunately, I'm podcasting through tot lines everywhere, computer charging, lost my headphones. And Scott, I want to thank you for the first time this year for dealing with me. I'll try and be better moving forward in 2021. That's my New Year's resolution to you. We have NFL playoffs to get to, college football playoffs wrapped up. Moving forward to the championship game, that is. Basketball still going on. A lot to get to, as always. And hopefully I can hear you through these Walmart cheap behind, probably got them at a gas station under the toilet seat headphones. So that's what I'm dealing with. So I may read your lips this whole episode.
Well, which is a funny thing considering, I don't know if it was about a month or so ago, and for those that aren't aware, you do have a bit of a hearing issue. And I was talking about how during like the pandemic, obviously people wear masks all the time. It's harder to read lips because you can't see people's mouths. And you're like, you read lips? I was like, yeah, like I felt like you thought I was insane for looking at people's mouths in a conversation. If you're in like a place where it's harder to hear or you're farther away from somebody. I mean, now you kind of see where I'm coming from, right?
Oh yeah. I probably should have picked it up when you gave me the insight earlier that it's time to start reading some lips. I could use it today. And for the first time, usually I only wear one headphone anyway, cause only one ear works. Right. So yeah. Fun fact about me, it's a new phenomenon, only having one ear. It's great. Long story, but a short story is literally only one of these headphones works.
It works.
And
it's perfect.
I have no choice but to wear one. So thankfully my good ear's hooked up today and I'm ready to talk some sports with you. It's a beerless episode. What are we on, a 2021 cleanse, a diet? What's going on?
Well, you know, they'll be cracked later in the day. We've got to find a way to continue to not only provide good content on this show in a timely fashion, but also continue to do our respective work properly for our day jobs. And that would I think require us to stay sober.
A lunch
enough
break
for this
episode.
Yes.
I mean, had to be done. Had to be done.
But that's because we wanted to talk to you because there's so much to talk about and we wanted to make sure we got it in and didn't delay it any further. Next week, we will have a delayed episode because of the college football playoff finale, the championship game taking place on a Monday night. Doesn't make any sense to bring that show to you on. You and I can't stay up late enough to record after that, and then we wouldn't want to record something before that game took place. So next week, we'll record on a Tuesday as opposed to a Monday. But this week, on a Monday, during the day, and we've got college football to talk about after the semifinals take place last weekend. And of course, week 17 in the books for the NFL means that we have our new expanded NFL playoffs set and ready to go for this big upcoming weekend, in which we'll have 6 games in 2 days, NFL playoffs action, which should be fun. So we're going to dive into that as well. But let's start with the college football, Alex. I mean, you and I are sort of repping here today, even though our team wasn't in the playoff. The team that has replaced us out of the ACC in the playoffs each of the last, 6 seasons now, they lose, much to everyone's surprise. The Clemson Tigers, a lot of people surprised, I would say. I don't think many foresaw Ohio State winning and certainly didn't foresee Ohio State winning in the manner that they did. An impressive effort from Ryan Day, Justin Fields, Trey Sermon and company. And all of a sudden, this weirdly has almost the feel of a 2014 Ohio State group the last time they advanced to the championship game. But we'll talk about the game, the championship, in a second. Clemson, what happened?
A lot of factors. Part of this, and I don't want to be knee-jerk here, but a lot of this feels like potentially the end of an era. And I don't mean Clemson not being good, but are we going to look back with hindsight and say that 2020 team was the last of the Clemson reign that we know today? It doesn't feel like the years past where a Deshaun Watson was being replaced with Trevor Lawrence, but there was also because quarterback is being restocked. I guess I have to start with that. DJ
Uiagalelei.
Last name down.
Uiagalelei.
DJ will be under center next year. And we know, because we had a sneak peek this year against Notre Dame and against Boston College, we know he's legit. Yep. That's not a boom or bust. That's a boom. That is a hit right there. But all the other positions for the first time in a long time are question marks. Certainly they're bringing in talented guys. We see the recruiting rankings. Florida State back in 2014 was a top five recruiting class. So the talent still is coming in. Doesn't necessarily mean they're going to continue producing the way they have. And I wonder about in the past where they restock. They lose a DeAndre Hopkins, a Sammy Watkins, but they also bring in a new reign of receivers.
Yeah, T. Higgins and Justin Ross and Trevor Lawrence. And yeah, it just feels like whatever they did, and like you said, it's not like their recruiting class isn't shaping up to be one of the best ones in Clemson history anyway. I mean, it is. It is fully loaded. The concern I have is not with those guys. The skill position guys, they've been able to reload in those. And it's sexy. Of course, you're going to attract the best QBs and the best running backs and the best receivers to go play at Clemson. Why wouldn't you want to? They're churning out NFL guys left and right at those respective positions. The trenches, though. And defensive line has been stout. They've had some of the most talented defensive linemen over the years. And this may have been just a one-year step back while they were grooming and developing some of those new pieces because they lost so much in the last 2 years. But man, oh, their O-line, I don't want to call it bad because that's an overstatement, but it was not up to par with the rest of, I feel, the offensive lines of the elite teams in the country. Ohio State's O-line, very much better. Alabama's O-line, very much better. And I even think Notre Dame's offensive line was better at times this year because I think they protected
Ian Book
well.
Notre Dame had a phenomenal offensive line. Potentially two first-rounders, two all-ACC guys. I know you and I shared the David Hale piece on ESPN.com right now. It's a free article. Great read if you have the opportunity. But after reading that, that's when I really said, man, I wonder if we're going to look back at this. And he highlights how Venables is still dominating. But in their last couple losses, they've been shredded. To the O-line point that you're making here, they've had this. The NFL sees talent. I mean, we know if the scouts think you have a guy, you probably have a guy. They've had three O-linemen go pro. Two of them were drafted last year. And that was it. During his only two others during Dabo's tenure have been drafted.
Yeah, it feels like they've almost been just so good at the skill stuff that like the O-line being just like above average was sort of masked. Like we know what Deshaun Watson is able to do without an O-line. Look at him playing Houston on Sundays.
Right.
And Trevor Lawrence, certainly a big, strong athlete. The offense is designed to get the ball out into space to playmakers very quickly. But I thought it was fascinating seeing, you know, Travis Etienne, arguably one of the best running backs in college football history, and he comes in and runs for 2 yards less per carry this year than he had in his career average. And
that's a really big dip against the same competition. It's not like the ACC got better or notably worse. I mean, the ACC is just a middle-tier conference right now, especially since Clemson doesn't have to play Clemson. They're playing all the other schools that aren't as good.
Right.
And Etienne, he did most of his damage this year as a receiver out of the backfield. Yep. And that makes you wonder about that offensive line and moving forward, how they're going to replace some guys who already were just solid college guys, not necessarily pro prospects.
For Venables, I'm not writing his epitaph yet. I mean, obviously he's been
I'd
one of the best.
Oh, I'd take him all day at Florida State and Garnet and Gold.
Right,
But I would not write him off.
Do recall at some point, the magic ran out when he was at Oklahoma. Like he was a really good defensive coordinator at Oklahoma. And at the end, his defenses were getting blitzed left and right. And then he sort of got scooped off the scrap heap by Dabo Swinney at Clemson. It was this question of, man, Brent Venables, does he even have it anymore? I mean, they just don't appear to be the same way. It was almost like a Bo Pelini type deal. It's like, well, big name, a lot of success in the past, but just doesn't seem to have it anymore. And then, of course, he reinvents himself at Clemson, does a great job. I don't know if you saw or remember, but in the last couple of weeks, it sort of went viral-ish about, you know, Venables and the Clemson defense and their sign stealing. You know, I'm using air quotes. I think those things, they're not sitting there doing a Spygate deal. They're just looking over, they're studying film, they're identifying tendencies for these hand signals, and they're using that to the best of their ability. I think that's all's fair in love and football in that regard. You're not doing anything excessive. But since that came out, all of a sudden, like, Ohio State changed so much of what they did. Dummy calls. They switched out wristbands at points during the game. And Clemson's defense hasn't looked that lost in years, it feels like. And I don't think that it's just as simple as, oh, now that they couldn't look at the signs and know what was coming, that Clemson's defense isn't going to be good anymore. But I do think that if you are able to take advantage of that, as Clemson obviously has over the years, then if schools are able to kind of take that next step to counter that move, then what does Venables have in his bag of tricks to once again come up with a counter to that? And he also needs to find linebackers that will tackle with their head up and stop getting ejected in playoff games. But.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was talking about Twitter being on fire. That lit Twitter on fire. It was the biggest debate since maybe the actual election, president election back
in November.
You talking
about the targeting call?
The targeting call, yeah.
He led with his head.
Yeah. No, I mean, by the book, he led with the crown of his helmet, went straight in the ribs.
Dude, like, look at what you're hitting. That's bad technique. If nothing else, by a defensive player. I mean, my God, you're going to paralyze yourself doing that.
That's true. No, it's true. But, you know, we do have to flip the coin and say, let's talk about Ohio State, the team that whooped Clemson's ass and didn't look like they had any trouble preparing as the number 11th ranked team. And I'm doing air quotes here because we joked about it in podcast past. Dabo decides that Ohio State is so inferior that he can shit talk them all week and not have to face the music. Well, guess what? Ohio State certainly was listening and had their bulletin board material ready. And it was in those guys' heads. They played out of their mind and running the ball. Trey Sermon, Justin Fields looked better than Trevor Lawrence. Not saying he's better, but he did look better on Friday night.
Mm.
Ohio State came to play, and I have to wonder now, after seeing them at the top of their game, assuming Fields is healthy, what they can do when they match up against Alabama, because going into this, it seemed like another date of an Alabama-Clemson rematch again, and it just felt like Groundhog's Day, and now we have something fresh, something new, and something exciting. That 7-point spread got covered with ease by the Buckeyes.
Yeah, it sounds like you're like me, and you're happy to see this matchup because it does feel fresh compared to, and I know it's, I mean, Ohio State's been in a bunch of these playoffs, but at the same time, we haven't seen Ohio State in a title game since 2014. Like, that's over half a decade ago. I mean, that's long enough to where this feels, and it wasn't against Alabama last time either. So right. I think this is fun in the fact that it is a little bit different.
Yeah, it feels fresh, even though you mentioned they're always around the title contention, always around the playoff talk. But guess what? They're a blue blood. That's how it's supposed to be. The fact that they haven't been back since 2014, that's when you say, okay, this is new, this is fun. Can they knock off the top dog as in Alabama? And I'm excited to see that because I did not want to see Clemson after Dabo spewing his Dabo-ness just another rematch. It felt old. It felt like I've read that story. I've watched that movie. I don't want to see it. I don't care if the players are different.
I'm 100% with you. And credit to Ryan Day, who's going for his first national championship, by the way. And credit to that group, because I think the fun story has been talking about Dabo and the way he voted things. I think the real story for motivation was the last couple of weeks of kind of the start-stop nature of Ohio State, kind of stumbling to a Big Ten championship, if you will. And then on top of that, just the over a year long to remember what losing in the waning moments of that semifinal against Clemson last year felt like. And it was a lot of the same characters involved, Fields most notably, Ryan Day also most notably, and they got to remember that it stung, and they wanted to rectify that. And
what was crazy to me is they didn't go out of their way to say, okay, it's time to focus on Bama. They did take a little bit of time to relish in that moment that they got revenge.
Why not?
And I like that. You know how Nick Saban would have never. Nick Saban would have been very Belichick-ish in the way he'd say, hey, we're on to Alabama, or in that case, we're on to Ohio State.
Right.
Meanwhile, Ryan Day in the press conference is like, don't think we forgot about how it felt losing in a game that we felt like we probably should have, could have won.
Well, with over a week to prepare now for the title game, a Friday night game to the following Monday, you get a little bit of time. It's okay to maybe extend that 24-hour rule to a 48-hour rule to enjoy it. Now, granted, don't do anything stupid because we need everybody to pass COVID protocols so they're available for the game. That'd be the last way you'd want to see this game impacted by some significant pieces missing due to positive tests. But we're at the end of a wild and wacky college football season with one game to go. And I think we're hopefully in for what should be a pretty interesting matchup because I think the physicality of Ohio State can match up all right with Alabama. The only question is, well, I think it's two different styles. Obviously, Ohio State has some electric playmaking ability. Justin Fields went down the field a lot successfully against Alabama, but I don't think anybody's in the same realm as Alabama when it comes to being electric on offense this year. No. So Ohio State's better off, I think, featuring that ground game, trying to pound it out with Tracer. I mean, those running... Sermon didn't get touched until he was like 4 to 5 yards down the field. It felt like the entire game against Clemson.
And let's not forget, Alabama this year's defense has been suspect at times. And do I expect Alabama, because of their track record, to step up in times most needed? Yeah, I probably do. But they haven't been the same Tide defense. That brings me to a great point. The Tide this whole year has been carried by their offense.
Mm-hmm.
And they lose Steve Sarkisian to Texas in a somewhat surprising, somewhat shocking as far as the timing of Texas firing Tom Herman. I'm very interested to see how that offense looks following that shakeup. Of course, Sark's going to stay there for a week and coach, but it also may cause a ripple moving forward because the offense has been what has carried them since they started throwing the ball downfield. They used to be a dink and dunk. Let's let our running backs lead the way. Now it's a receiver driven offense.
Yeah. And maybe it's just the Florida State fan in me that is always still has a scar from an offensive coordinator taking a head coaching job and then coaching in a national title game with Mark Richt taking the Georgia job.
I always think it's a bigger deal because of that Oklahoma game.
Yeah. And granted, Snoop Minnis didn't play in that game, was suspended for academic stuff, but you had a Heisman Trophy winner quarterback and he scored zero offensive points against Oklahoma in that 2000 national championship game in the Orange Bowl against Oklahoma and lost 13-2. I mean, that's an all-timer when it comes to that kind of example. Correct me if I'm wrong here, though, right? When Lane Kiffin, was that the 2017 or 2018 season that Lane Kiffin was basically told to pack his bags in between the semifinal and the championship game.
They left him on the tarmac is the story.
Well, no, that was USC when he got fired, but
that's right.
He was told by Saban basically like, hey, we don't need your services anymore. Sark actually took over play calling in that game and called the national title game. Yeah. And I'm thinking, so the difference is obviously if it was the 2017 game, they ended up winning when they made the switch at halftime. If it was the 2018 one, that's the one where they got housed by Clemson. And I got to look it up now just to confirm, because that's a big difference, obviously, when it comes to which one did Kiffin not coach in, because that would be another example of an offensive coordinator either not being there or not being mentally there and
right.
Almost in a championship
in limbo
game and that
mentally.
Right. And that significantly impacting a team in a championship game.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be a great matchup. I do think them finding a replacement feels a little different than it has in the past. They always reload on coordinators. We talk about it all the time, how they're the team that is always poached. Brian Daboll's now with the Bills. He was an offense coordinator there. They've had guy after guy after guy, coach after coach, be poached from Saban's staff, and he always somehow finds a viable, if not improved, replacement. Sark feels a little different now. The offense is really pushing it downfield.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating. Just to put a bow on that, by the way, I had the right concept. I was early by a year. It was the 2016 season that he left or was relieved of his duties. They ended up losing to Clemson in that dramatic title game with Deshaun Watson. The
Deshaun
first one
Watson
that Clemson
comeback.
Won. Yeah, the first one that Clemson won in the rematch from the year before. But yeah, it's you know, it's funny because already like Adam Gase is a name that's being rumored as a guy to potentially come over to the Nick Saban rehabilitation school for coaches or whatever you want to start calling
it works,
this thing.
Man, and then they get promotions like crazy.
It's amazing. And for Steve Sarkisian, you know, hats off to him. Hopefully he has everything, some of his demons from his past in check. I mean, I know he had to go to rehab. That's why he lost the USC coaching job. He probably wasn't necessarily qualified for that job when he got it the first time. He hadn't done anything special per se at Washington before getting, but you know how USC was. It's almost like Michigan. It's like, gotta hire somebody with ties to the school. And so they've made some bad hires in the past, but you know, before he's 50, he's got the USC and the Texas head coaching jobs now. And he's certainly done some nice things with both the Falcons and with Alabama in engineering some offenses, and USC way back with all those talented guys there. But can Saban continue to restock? Because isn't that what you see ends these dynasties? We started this whole topic talking about, is this the end of the Clemson dynasty? And I think that was more for a name of a topic than we actually feel like it's over. But look at the part of the stability for Clemson over these years is they hadn't really lost any coaches. I mean, most significantly, they lost Chad Morris years ago, but they were able to replace him.
SMU, and then they just lost the USF, Jeff Scott.
Right, and Jeff Scott, co-offensive coordinator with Tony Elliott, who did not coach in the game on Friday night due to COVID. And so Jeff Scott goes and takes the USF job. Venable's always rumored to take a job, hasn't gone anywhere yet. At some point, that hurt Urban Meyer when he was at Florida. He was losing the Dan Mullins of the world, and he was losing the Charlie Strongs, and he was having a hard time finding the good hires to replace them. And that is as hard an aspect of it as the recruiting and the building. Arguably, I would say it's harder to stay on top of the mountain because of how hard it is to continue to properly identify and cultivate new assistants when inevitably your lead assistants move on for greener pastures. Have I put it as good succinctly and as good as anybody can put it there?
I was just trying to add to that. I have nothing to add to it. I think that's exactly spot on.
And that's what separates Nick Saban. It makes him I think in my mind, the best to have ever done it, because goodness gracious, he is so good at identifying coaching talent. And then rehabbing, we jokingly use that word, but he's able
to, not a joke,
but he's able to instill, he's able to get these coaches to buy into his philosophy. And that's what
why
helps
he's
them.
Such a good recruiter. He can recruit coaches, grown ass men
and players
and people see the process. They know it works. So that obviously is a track record of you better buy in because it works. I know what I'm talking about, my way or the highway. And I love that strategy. I love the way it works. But you joke about rehab. He has like 20 just off-field analysts who are former coaches, like head coaches. Butch Davis, Chris Winkie's been one. Chris Winkie got fired from the NFL when Jeff Fisher got fired from the Rams. Then Winkie goes and sits at Alabama for a year and then becomes offense coordinator or quarterbacks coach under Pruitt, under Tennessee. There's a lot of examples of how many guys he's brought in, puts his arm around them, lets them help him. And then it's a stepping stone for them to get back on their feet somewhere else.
You said Butch Davis. I know you meant Butch Jones, from Tennessee. Yes. Butch Davis in the news though lately, because he was the head coach of the Cleveland Browns the last time they made the playoffs. So that's probably why he's on the top of your mind.
That's right.
The anything else from this college football thing? We're excited for the championship game, of course. You know, Texas, you already brought it up. Curious timing on that firing, but they certainly must have had Sark pretty much lined up before they did it. I can't imagine that they would have fired and then not had him ready to sign that contract.
Oh, yeah, that deal was done under the table for a couple weeks. It had to have been. They would have never fired Herman without having a replacement ready to roll, basically signed, sealed, and delivered, minus the signed part.
And the dreaded AD, you know, not a support of that approval, and boom, it feels like the second you get the vote of confidence, that's what I was looking for. The second you get that vote of confidence from the AD, dead man walking.
And it's something that we both said. Oh, I guess Herman said at Texas because he was the only one who had a super hot seat, and we're thinking that he's going to be gone. And then the AD says, we're good to go. We're going to roll with him next year. We like the direction 2021. They beat Colorado. and Herman's out. So it was very, very surprising timing there over in Austin. I think another thing that kind of caught my eye was Michigan backing Harbaugh until 2026. A little bit of an extension there. Kiffin gets an extension at Ole Miss.
Not so fast on the Michigan one. He hasn't signed it.
Is that right?
He hasn't signed it. He's actively shopping for a head coaching gig in the NFL right now. So he's been offered.
Public?
Yeah. When Monday morning, it went probably right about lunchtime, actually. But
he hasn't signed it. Well,
I had seen this weekend that he hadn't signed it yet. And that's when everybody's making the jokes about how on Saturday that Ohio State had won two games in 2 days for Ohio State there with the offer of extension. But yeah, Harbaugh apparently really trying to get back into the NFL. Maybe he's just tired of recruiting and losing to Ohio State.
You want to talk about the strain and differences of what you're dealing with when it comes to college versus pro recruiting. They're both all year round gigs. Okay. So that much, it's still football all year round, but there's different aspects to it that probably wear on you differently, I'd assume. In college, not only is every game such a big deal, beating your rivals such a big deal, you have to recruit and you have to go into living rooms and talk to parents and sell this kid, sell the parents, get the kid on campus, develop them. There's a lot to it. There's also a lot of motivating you have to do because these are 18 to 23-year-old kids. It takes a lot of motivating. It takes that high energy, different type of energy than when you're in a locker room with grown men that have money on the line that know they have to motivate themselves to a degree. There's still a motivation factor, but it's totally different. And that brings me to a great conversation here in Jacksonville. Urban Meyer, as a head coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars, very strong rumor out there that he potentially will be in line to take over for Doug Marrone, who was fired yesterday. Scott, I want to know, do you think what Meyer has done in college, can he put some of that out the window? I think a lot of that babysitting young players and, recruiting what he was so good at, but also one of those things that takes a lot of time. Do you think he would be effective just talking X's and O's, flipping the culture and having the Jags change the way they play football and play it good, play it well?
I think he's certainly capable of that. He is, as far as college coaches going to the NFL are concerned, the way that Urban has empowered his assistants over the years, I think is a good sign. Like while he's very involved, obviously, I mean, Tom Herman was the engineer of the offense when they won the last Super Bowl or last championship game. Dan Mullen was widely considered to be the brain power behind the offense in a lot of what the success that they had at Florida the first time around. Ryan Day obviously has parlayed very nicely from being the OC into being the head coach there. And a lot of his defensive assistants have gone on to do big things as well.
Vrabel being one of them.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that he is a student of the coaching game and the fact that I think he's really looked at what it takes to be a successful head coach at all different levels, which is why he has been a successful head coach everywhere he has been. I don't think he is purely a recruiting rah-rah guy the way like a Dabo Swinney is, the whole way that it wouldn't work at all, in my opinion, if Dabo tried the NFL. Because if everything he does that works in college doesn't translate necessarily one-to-one to the NFL in that way. What concerns me here, obviously, is the health stuff. He just doesn't really stay one place too long because of the health concerns. And this has the feelings of like the Bob Stoops to Florida State rumors, like where it's a name.
It feels very splash, very sexy.
Very splash, right. But is it a good fit? That's the question. And that's what I don't know the answer to, and I'm not sure of, because it does feel, like you said, splashy and sexy, and we'll get people talking about you, unlike the last two hires that certainly did not do that. But is that what you're looking for? Or are you looking for someone who can get this franchise on the right. Now, I'm not sitting here saying like I know the answer as to who should be the head coach, because I don't think this thing is a, if it was an exact science, there wouldn't be any debate as to this kind of stuff. I don't know if your hot offensive coordinators, the likes of Brian Daboll, Eric Bieniemy, or Joe Brady, are ready to take over and actually lead in that different perspective as a head coach. I don't know if you can go to some of the hot defensive names, or even if you want to go to a defensive minded head coach like a Robert Saleh or not, or if you want to go the college route, because that is hit or miss in how certain, I mean, maybe for you know, everybody's pointing out like Pete Carroll, obviously very successful college coach that went on to the NFL, but Pete Carroll also had coached in the NFL before he went to college. Remember, he
failed miserably.
Yeah, he failed miserably, but learned a lot and was able to take those lessons and apply them his second time around. And I don't know if Urban Meyer has ever experienced any semblance of quote unquote failure that would allow him to pull some valuable lessons or not. And we know he takes losing as hard as anybody that's ever done this thing. Well, you don't go undefeated or one loss in the NFL.
Maybe that'll relieve some stress, though, knowing one game is not end all be all.
You would hope, but man, he's in his late 50s. Like at some point, like a leopard doesn't change their spots, you know, that type of thing. Can you teach an old dog new tricks? I don't know. I really don't.
I'm excited to see it unfold, because I keep battling. It's like the angel and demon on your shoulders. One side of me is pro Meyer. One side of me is, you know, anti-Meyer, more so anti. I just don't feel like a guy. The Jags can't screw this one up, right? Like they've had so many years of consecutive sucking, right? To where they have to get it right. And if they go draft Trevor Lawrence, you better have the damn right head coach.
Here's what's more concerning to me now. It comes out on Monday morning that Shad Khan, when speaking to the media for the first time in forever, announces to the world that he actually had final roster say in the 2020 season and plans on keeping that even after they hire a new GM in 2021. Like, Shad, what does Shad Khan know any more than what you or I know? Like a friend of the program, Colin McQuillan, has come on here and said before, he's like, I would honestly love a shot at being a GM, because some of these guys, I just feel like I couldn't do any worse than. Yeah. I know Colin could do a better job than Shad Khan when it comes to selecting a left guard.
A guy, you know, that like, grew up watching soccer and being solely invested in business.
Business, yeah. Like if it comes
to
starting
football,
if it comes to starting if I'm pitching a Shark Tank idea, yeah, I'll probably run it by Shad. I trust his acumen on those type of things. I don't want him evaluating draft picks. Like this isn't his strength. It's not his wheelhouse. You're an owner. Your job is to supply the money to the people that make the and hire the right people. But this is just, man, just the latest move in a long line of just head-scratchingly dumbfounding decisions by Shad Khan as the owner of the Jaguars, which, you know, the guy I think we owe him a lot, because he stabilized the franchise when he acquired it from the Weavers, and despite a lot of the rumblings over the years, I don't think the team is any closer today to moving to London than it was in 2011 when he officially bought the team. But he is hurting the franchise now more than he is helping it. Like, he is holding this franchise back by, at first it was, he wasn't making enough of an impact. Like, he didn't have his finger on the pulse enough of the team, keeping Gus Bradley for 900 years as head coach, despite the fact that he very obviously wasn't getting any better year in and year out. That is not being involved enough. Now it's, what? He's able to approve? What GM's going to want to come here now, knowing that you have the owner? That's a Jerry Jones situation. Who wants the owner looking over their shoulder?
I wonder how accurate that was, though.
Shad Khan said it himself.
Yeah, I know, but do you not...
Why would you make that up? That's such a random thing to, like,
bullshit. I don't
think
he's making it up. I think he's one of those guys that they ask him, hey, do you like Trevor Lawrence? He's like, yeah, he's good. You should draft him.
Okay. I mean, I hope it's as simple as that, and not like when Dan Snyder pushed for Dwayne Haskins and basically blew up everything in Washington because of that decision and got Jay Gruden fired. But I'm just, just when everything was looking as rosy as it's looked for the Jaguars in a long time, it just feels like things can't be too good, because then something
then
else
Sean
comes
reappears.
Out.
He's like the ghost of Christmas past. He just pops up every now and then. You're like, this son of a bitch again?
This is never a good thing when you show up.
Yeah, it's like you just feel like a big cloud of a big entry, lights in a cloud of smoke, and Shad walks through the smoke and you're like, no, again? Yeah. Shad, hide the mic, please.
And again, it's goodness gracious. We want to hear from him, and then we hear from him, we go, this is why we don't want to hear from you. Oh, my goodness. It's frustrating. But hopefully, fingers crossed, everything works out for the best anyway. But we'll be keeping an eye on that GM and head coaching change for Jacksonville, as well as for a variety of other teams, as Black Monday officially hit, with Anthony Lynn being relieved of his duties in Los Angeles with the Chargers. Adam
Long
Gase.
Overdue. Talking about an incompetent head coach, a team that's full of talent year after year after year. The Chargers, God, being a Chargers fan, had to have been tough under Anthony Lynn.
No doubt. And we saw Adam Gase officially, in the most inevitable thing of all time, relieved of his duties in New York as well. So we'll see if that's the end of...
I think the Broncos might make a move from Vic Fangio too.
I don't know. I really don't. I guess we'll find out probably by the end of the day or on Tuesday, because hard to fire a guy after 2 years. And it's not like the Broncos are completely incompetent. I mean,
no.
It's not. They weren't the Jets, right? Like Yeah, exactly. I mean, they were a team that dealt with some injuries and took a few steps forward here and a few steps backward there. And I don't know. We'll see if anybody else gets the axe there. Shall we talk a little bit about the playoffs?
Let's do it. More football, not less football. We got to reminisce and really soak these last couple weeks of football in. We're under a month from it being over. And you know, I'm an eternal optimist. That right there makes me sad, because we've had a tough 2020. There was a period where we actually had zero sports for the first time in my life. Mm-hmm. There was no sports on. Now football's back, and I don't want to see it go.
No, I'm with you. It is, first of all, a shout out to our own hometown hero, Johnny Wolford. Goes in, gets a win, gets the Rams into the playoffs, played well too. I mean,
yeah,
he was, I thought they set up the offense pretty well for him to be able to do maybe as much as was in his skill set as was necessary. Ran the ball a lot, tough, took a couple hits, and popped right back up and did it. And credit to him, knocks the Cardinals out of the playoffs, gets the Rams into the playoffs, and now it's everybody's on Goff watch to see whether or not he'll be healthy enough to play in their first-round playoff matchup. Otherwise, we could see John Wolford from Bishop Kenny High School on the banks of the St. John's River making a start in the NFL playoffs, which would be fascinating to see as well.
It would be wild. And part of me wants to see that and wants him to go in and get a win. I don't think Goff in an outside cold weather game in Seattle, assuming that's what it is much better than Johnny. And I know that's probably inaccurate, but Goff is so wildly inconsistent. There's a lot of times where if he's outdoors and there's weather affecting him, he just cannot play football. And then you see him the next week in a dome or a good weathered game, and he's just slinging it all around the lot. So he's a little unpredictable in that sense. I think Johnny is what he is. Obviously, you would like the experience in decision-making from a quarterback who's been there in a big-time game. Obviously, Goff's been in a Super Bowl in the past, so you would prefer Goff to start. But I selfishly want to see Johnny get a shot.
I'm with you. And if Goff is under 85%, yeah, I don't think he gives you that much better of a chance to win at that point than John Wolford does, based off of what we saw on Sunday. Well, all right, let's get into it. We're going to give our best, or what we're looking forward to the most from each matchup here in this action-packed weekend, which will have three games a day on Saturday and Sunday. Plenty to watch for, starting on Saturday with the first wild card game, AFC matchup, the two-seeded Buffalo Bills and the seven-seeded Indianapolis Colts, who held on to beat the Jacksonville Jaguars at home yesterday to get that final playoff spot and knock the Miami Dolphins out. The Bills, of course, helping knock the Dolphins out by absolutely lambasting them. The number one scoring defense in the NFL gets obliterated by Josh Allen, and then the backups as well for the Bills, who appear to be a wagon at this point. What are you looking forward to in this game?
Yeah, the Bills have hit their stride. You said they're a wagon. I've hitched my wagon to them. I mean, they are absolutely tearing the league up, setting the world on fire behind them, leaving everything to ash. And I just don't know if the Colts have impressed me for multiple game stretches at all this season. You know, the one time you think they're scrappy and going to play well, they don't. And doesn't it feel like every year we have to watch the Colts get a shitty Saturday game? I mean, they usually play the Texans. It's usually like,
no,
required.
I was going to say it's that AFC South Titans game normally. Yeah.
Yeah.
This will not be the ESPN early wild card game. ESPN actually gets, they win in this scenario in which like the expanded playoffs kind of reconfigures how the games are aired, because ESPN always got that early Saturday game that was always the least desirable matchup. And This year ESPN actually gets, they get Sunday. I think they get two Sundays or.
I saw ABC has a game on Sunday. I can't remember which one.
Maybe they get the Steelers-Browns then. For some reason here, I'm on CBS right now, which has that Steelers-Browns game is airing on Telemundo. I don't think that's that'd be
no,
the Spanish station.
Inaccurate.
I don't think that it may be airing on that station. But
hey,
I don't think
it's like the Rosetta Stone. If I started watching football for 4 hours per game every Sunday in Spanish, I'd be fluent by now.
Probably. Well, you know how it goes where like always – like toward the end of the season with these alternate broadcasts, they'll have the games on more than one channels and there will be different types of broadcasts that go on.
Different
think
streams,
about, yep. Yeah, think about the NCAA tournament where they'll do the Final Four and they'll have like the team stream where it's like the Homer announcers for one team on the thing. And then like all of a sudden everybody on Twitter is like blowing up. It's like, these announcers are rooting for North Carolina. I can't believe it. It's like, you guys are idiots. You're watching the North Carolina team stream. Of course they're rooting for North Carolina. That's exactly what it's supposed to be. But yeah, that's sort of how this feels a little bit. But as I pull it up, we'll see here if confirming right now. No, that's NBC. So all right, so ESPN and ABC, because I think they have to have it on linear both television as well as or network television, I should say, as well as cable for Sunday. And then NBC gets two, CBS gets two, Fox gets one this weekend, interestingly enough. Okay. Back to the topic at hand, and that is the start, that Colts-Bills game, which is 105 on CBS, Bills and Colts. And so you want to see, what was it that you even said? I got so distracted in the whole.
I was like, you just went on a three-minute rant on what channel these,
what
games,
channel
are
these
on.
Games are on.
I was going to let you ride. I was watching the clock. I was like, you know what? We got time. Let's just enjoy this. Scott going down in a wormhole of channels. But I basically said the Bills are just dominating everyone. Colts haven't been consistent yet. They're missing Costanzo? I almost called him
Anthony
George Costanzo.
Yeah,
I know. A little Seinfeld reference. But missing their left tackle is a big deal against an aggressive Bills defense who's starting to turn the corner. Earlier in the year, they were good, not great, but they're really hitting their stride. Offense has been there the whole way this year. I think it's going to be a game where in the fourth quarter, the Bills pull away, and Josh Allen probably bringing Buffalo there. I won't say probably. Josh Allen bringing Buffalo their first playoff win in a long, long time.
Yeah, since what, like 93 or 2 or something like that?
Oh, it's been
it's been a long, long time. Yeah, I'm excited to see what the Bills have learned, right? We saw them in the playoffs last year. They were, quote-unquote, a year ahead of schedule. Josh Allen catches the first touchdown of the game on the trick play. Everything was really rolling for Buffalo in that first half, and the wheels really came off the wagon, pun intended, in the second half for the Bills. And Houston was able to do what they do under Deshaun Watson and rally and we saw Josh Allen trying a crazy lateral at the end and things like that, just sort of head-scratching decisions that you see from a second-year quarterback. He has taken he has grown in leaps and bounds this year. I mean, he went from...
Which is why I like Brian Daboll FYI.
Right, which is why we're sitting here going from last year, are we still sure about this guy, still a lot of question marks, still very raw, to this year, MVP conversation for Josh Allen, and deserved. And I'm excited to see on that big stage again how this Bills team rises to the occasion, because I think this will be a good indication this week. If they come out and they roll the way they have rolled opponents here in this last month of the season, I think you really got to start considering whether or not they're good enough to challenge Kansas City for that AFC Super Bowl berth. But if they go out there and still kind of finding their feet, figuring it out a little bit against what I think is just a slightly above average Indianapolis team, then I'm still leaning toward Kansas City's the favorite.
Yeah, right now the only team in the AFC that feels hot as the Bills is another AFC matchup that I'm going to bounce to is the – or are you going in order?
I was going to go in order of day.
Go in order of the day. But, yes, okay. The Bills are as hot as anyone in the NFL. I think that much, to put a bow on this matchup here, is the storyline. And Phillip Rivers, can his dusty old ass even compete anymore and throw the ball downfield?
Yeah,
I think that's what we need to see from them. T.Y. Hilton's playing some good football right now. Jonathan Taylor is really the Colts' best player right now. And we'll
that does help them
can do
a little bit, because I imagine Buffalo in January is going to be frigid. So the running game could help out Indianapolis to try and stay
in. Let's get a snow game.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah, let's dial it up. First game in Buffalo. When was the last time they played in Buffalo? We'll have to look that up, or we'll leave that homework up to one of our listeners.
Sometime in the early 90s. I mean, yeah, it's been a long time.
Let's get some snow. It seems fitting.
Definitely. And glad to see that at least a limited amount of fans will be able to go in and attend that game as well. So that's exciting. Some socially distanced, I feel like Scott Hansen, this before a socially distanced crowd at AT&T State, you know, that's what he always says. But a chance for some of those Bills fans who long awaited, as you mentioned, for a home playoff game. I mean, we're talking nearly 30 years, and they will get a chance to, at least a few of them, to get a chance to see it in person. That feels right. And I know where you're going with that AFC follow-up, so we'll get to that here in a moment. The second game on Saturday, the Fox game, NFC wild card playoffs. Also, the simulcast on Nickelodeon game, the Seahawks hosting the LA Rams. We had touched on this just a bit a moment ago. I'll start things off this time, Alex. Obviously, I think the biggest thing is what we already talked about. Who goes at QB for the Rams? Is it Wolford? Can he perform? If this was in a normal year, Seahawks hosting whoever it is, Wolford, injured Goff, what, Blake Bortles? I mean, Seahawks roll with the 12th man in attendance at whatever the heck that stadium is called now. And that is how it goes. But
the Hawks Nest.
Yeah, yeah. This year, with it being empty, you know, maybe the Rams can go in there and pull a little trickery and spring something on them. But I still think that depending on how healthy Goff is, I think Wolford could potentially be a better option. And secondly, I look forward to watching this game on Nickelodeon.
Are you really going to watch it on Nick?
I think I'm going to watch at least part of it.
Yeah. What's the difference? What are they doing special?
I mean, it's going to be like kid geared. They're going to have like weird animations and like SpongeBob SquarePants and different announcers and stuff like that. Iron Eagle's son, Noah, will be on the play-by-play.
I saw that. I know part of my take reported that a while ago. Didn't report it, but you know.
Well, that's, because Jake Marsh and Noah Eagle are in the same class at Syracuse, so buddies in that regard.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what they do. I think anytime you get divisional opponents in a playoff game, you know, they know them very well. They don't have to stress about preparation this week in the sense of finding new things that will work. They know exactly what works against these teams and what doesn't. They play them two times a year as it is, and they just played recently. I think the Rams defense is going to shut down the Seahawks offense. The offense for the Seahawks has looked terrible. Probably, as it always does, is going to come down to a late fourth quarter drive that Russell Wilson's going to architect. And they will win the game and squeak by. And that's my prediction. And you're not going to convince me that it's not coming down to Russell Wilson all of a sudden turning it on late.
Yeah, the Seahawks, for the beginning of the year, they're winning on offense alone, and now they're winning on defense. It's weird. It's one or the other.
The biggest 180 I've seen from a team where the defense has gotten notably better, but the offense all of a sudden isn't good. Usually the offense is always good and the defense gets a little better as the year goes on, or depending on what side of the ball they're struggling on. This offense has gone completely silent, and Tyler Lockett's not doing anything. I mean, DK Metcalf's still a really good player. It's just, I don't know what happened to him. I need someone who really breaks down the X's and O's to give me some answers, because I'm totally confused.
All right, on to our last game of Saturday, NBC, Saturday Night Football. Saturday night on Sunday Night Football, or you know, how, I don't know how they always end up making it way more complicated than it needs. Sunday Night Football on Saturday night, I think, is how they bill it. Very confusing, regardless. But it will be on NBC, and it's the football team of Washington hosting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Bucks back in the playoffs for the first time since 2008, I believe it is. Washington back in the playoffs for the first time since the infamous RG3 torn ACL game against Seattle in 2012. So it's been a while there too. And this is they made the playoffs with Kirk Cousins, I forgot, and lost to the Packers in the first round a couple years after that. I think they made the playoffs a couple times with Kirk, and they haven't won a game in a while. I off the top of my head, pretty sure the Washington football team's last playoff win is against the Bucs back in 2005. Mark Brunell against Chris Sims. Does that ring a bell to you?
No, I remember watching that. All. Doesn't ring a bell. No bells are ringing.
I remember that game. I watched the game, and Brunell. I'll
take your word for it.
Leading. I know that they won that game, and I can't think of Washington winning a playoff game since then. But somebody fact check me on that.
Who did they have?
Wrong.
Clinton Portis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Clinton Portis, Chris Cooley, Santana Moss.
Back when you were a Skins fan.
Yeah. Yeah. Back in the day. But yeah. I've since I can't root for that many teams with bad ownership. I mean, I have to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah. Hey, the hometown team. You've always been there. But I'm excited for this game, mainly because that defensive line from Washington's legit. Problem is their offense is pitiful. It'll be really, really, really fun to watch Tom Brady in the playoffs in a brand new uniform. And guess what? The Bucs are on the road. I mean, they're not playing down in Tampa. They're up there in Washington in the cold. Not that that'll affect them. I'm just excited. The old school helmets are back. They got the white jerseys. Bucs are going to look sharp. Bucs are going to roll. I got them by at least 13.
Yeah, I think they'd roll too. And this is just part of the continuing Tampa Bay narrative, it feels like. It feels like they haven't played. They haven't beaten anybody good this year, is what it feels like, you know? And I know they have, and somebody could run through the whole schedule and be like, oh, they're good. But it feels like every, like, major, like, primetime game or big game that the Bucs are in against a quality opponent, they find a way to lose. And
Packers,
here they are.
Saints those
twice.
Two come, Saints twice, Packers once.
Yeah. I mean, and here they are getting the easiest first-round draw out of any team in the playoffs and getting the survivor of the NFC least. So,
well, that's why yesterday week 17 is always funny, because half the games mean nothing and the other half mean a whole lot.
Yeah.
Seeding was very important to get the seed that, what are they? Fifth
the five.
Seed.
Yeah. Yeah. The five against the four.
So
seeded
important
Washington,
to
yeah.
get that fifth seed so they could play the fourth division winner, as opposed to playing, picture them getting the sixth seed and having to go all the way to Seattle.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Or, no, it'd be a New Orleans rematch.
No. They'd be playing.
It'd be a New Orleans rematch.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, because the Rams are the four.
I don't think they want
Rams
that. The in the
right.
dome, they don't want to play the Saints.
No. They want to avoid New Orleans. They want to avoid New Orleans as long as they can.
It's going to be really important to get Mike Evans back, but that's why this draw was such a big deal, getting the Washington Redskins, because Antonio Brown took a huge step last week, showing he's still Antonio Brown somewhere in that crazy ass head of his. He's still a really good football player. Mike Evans got banged up. Looks like he'll be day to day. Whether he plays or not, I don't think totally affects them this week, but that's good news moving forward, because I do think they end up prevailing up in Washington.
Yeah, what the fun stat to watch for, like, Tom Brady is, I think, 0-4 in night games this year. And they get a night game. Old man Brady be too tired to play well? That'll be the question. Will it matter? That's probably the better question. Probably not. All right, on to Sunday. You teased this one earlier as far as teams you don't want to face in the playoffs that are humming on all cylinders right now. It feels like the two of them, maybe the top two of them, are in the AFC. And this one is the Baltimore Ravens, who a couple of weeks ago were on the outside looking in, and they definitively played themselves into the playoffs with how they performed down the stretch in playing their best football of the year by a long shot, including just an absolute dismantling of the Cincinnati Bengals to wrap up the season on Sunday. They have the 1:05 kick on ESPN ABC on Sunday afternoon, and they travel to Tennessee in what is as intriguing a first-round matchup as we have for so many different reasons, Alex. But here you go. What a fascinating draw because of what happened just a year ago in the playoffs.
I think it's going to be the most exciting game to watch. I think it's very evenly matched. I don't want to play the Ravens right now, but the Ravens have been doing what the Ravens do. They don't beat good teams, and they lose to They don't lose. Oh, wow. I'm really struggling with this for some reason.
I'll give you
a moment. They beat the shit out of bad teams, and they lose to good teams is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I got
but
you.
Every time they have an opponent they're supposed to beat, they kill them. And then when they're in a tight game, they typically lose because guess what? It comes down to Lamar Jackson being able to throw the football because everyone knows you cannot stop those guys running the ball, whether it's J.K. Dobbins or Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. Very, very difficult to stop. Last year, that's exactly what Tennessee did. They made Lamar Jackson throw the ball, and he looked terrible at it. And they, the Tennessee Titans, went on a run to the AFC Championship following that convincing win.
They threw all over the Ravens in that game. Tannehill, that was like the moment where people were like, whoa, are we doing this? Is Tannehill good?
Is Tannehill good? Yeah. It was very, very fun to see that draw and see that rematch. And I think for that reason, I got to go with the Ravens here. I think they're going to be crazy fired up. The defense, Marcus Peters is back. Defense is playing well. Calais Campbell's healthy. I got the Ravens in this one.
The thing I'm most interested to see, can the Ravens get off to a good start? Because we know that is seemingly the biggest key to their success over the since Lamar Jackson came and took over as the starter of this team. If they can get off doing what they do to a good start and take an early lead, man, I don't know if we've had a better front-running team in the NFL in the last 3 years. But if Tennessee is able to ground, pound, control, maybe force a turnover, get Baltimore thinking a little bit about how those demons from last year, then look out. Things could go similar. And I mean, the guy on the other side who's running the rock too is heating up at the right time of year again. Goes for 2,000 yards, only the 8th running back in NFL history to do that. Yuli's own Derrick Henry leading the league in rushing consecutive years as well. And by the way, interesting stat I heard yesterday, every running back that has done that before Henry has made the Hall of Fame. So Derrick Henry certainly making his case for the Hall of Fame in how good he has been the last several years, undoubtedly. But Ravens got to get. I don't know. I haven't picked any of these so far. I don't. Maybe I'll leave you to be the
picker,
the Nostradamus, and I'll just sit here to storylines, which I'm better at.
I'll allow it.
All right. I first 10 minutes of that game though. Must watch. The most must watch first 10 minutes of any of these games this weekend.
Yeah.
You're nodding, which is great radio, but
no. Well, why do you say the first 10 minutes? I guess I'm trying to follow you.
It will determine what tenor this game is going to take.
Yeah.
Is Baltimore ready to go?
The Titans are a tough nosed team too.
Yeah,
they're not going to,
I'm not writing off the Titans. That's
right,
what I'm saying.
They're not laying down. I just think they're going to be extremely fired up.
It wouldn't shock me if the Titans come out and punch the Ravens in the mouth a couple times, turn them over and do something similar to last year. It also wouldn't shock me if the Ravens came out and just ran the ball right down the gut of the Titans, scored a couple of touchdowns, made it look easy, and then boom. And that's why I almost don't feel like this game as great of a matchup as it seems to be. I almost feel like this game turns into a blowout one way or the other, just because like one team is going to completely demoralize the other one at somehow, some way. But I could be way off on that. All right, next game on Sunday, Saints hosting the backdoor Bears. And I call them that because they literally backdoored their way into the playoffs, losing on Sunday and making it anyway because of the tiebreaker over the Arizona Cardinals. 8-8 football team. I mean, we had a 10-win team getting left out of the AFC. And we've got a 7-9 team and an 8-8 team making it in the NFC. This just continues our talk from last week about the disparity in I guess you could call it competition in the two leagues this year. Do the Bears have a snowball's chance in the Superdome in this one?
Drew Brees in the Superdome's a different quarterback. If it was in Chicago, I'd say no, but that defense is going to keep it low scoring. I mean, Alvin Kamara should be back. They should have their running backs back. They really missed everyone.
Had to play Ty Montgomery this week, picked him up off the street. And by the way, goodness gracious, Ty Montgomery. I get it. There are probably a limited amount of numbers to choose, but
stop
the fact that they pick him up off the scrap heap and he's like, oh, good, 88's available. I can wear that again. Like, dumb. Okay. Like, it was cute when you were good.
No, I'm a receiver and a running back.
Yeah. He hasn't played receiver in 8 years, but yeah. He might have one
catch
out of the backfield.
Literally said Stanford or his first year at Green Bay.
Whatever. Anyway. Yeah. The Bears, if they were at home, right? Bear weather, they might have a better chance.
They took him to overtime this year. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we said Drew Brees can't play outside. Right. Look at him. And look at that Bears defense getting after him. He's not mobile. He gets the ball out of his hand quick is the thing, because the Bears defense will get home if you sit back and throw it. I think this one's going to be a little bit closer than you think because of that defense and Trubisky running around. You know I don't like Trubisky. You know I don't think he's good. Sorry, Taylor Dahl, if you're listening. But I think it's going to be a much closer game. And the line opened at 9.5.
9.5, yeah.
Probably taking those 9.
Okay. I just think the Saints defense eats the Bears offense alive.
Running game under David Montgomery
has been better.
Has been way better these past couple weeks. I'm not picking the Bears to win. I don't think they're going to upset them, but snowball's chance. I've seen crazier things.
And who calls the plays, right? Like Nagy gave him up a couple of weeks ago publicly. From all I've seen, the reporting the last day and a half is that it was pretty obvious that Nagy had retaken play calling because the play calling looked a lot like it had earlier in the season when he was doing it again. And like they stopped the rollouts for Trubisky, a lot of inside zone runs. If he calls the play, I mean, there's just no way. Now, if the offense
he's
gets a little creative,
because he's happy that he has his job confirmed for next year.
He's a little egocentric, I think, at times when it comes to that kind of stuff, which is going to be his downfall in the end. All right, last matchup, one near and dear to your heart, the stumbling Pittsburgh Steelers, who did get a big win 2 weeks ago, benched everybody.
Scott, we are an absolute wagon.
literally, on this program 2 weeks ago, you were renouncing your Steelers fandom. They were hurting your heart that much. We got to watch Mason Rudolph's stupid face on Sunday, so that was good. I was really hoping that some dude off the bench would just come out and hit him. Like some Browns guy that isn't necessary, just comes out and is like, this is for my guy, Miles Garrett, and paying you back, and just goes and punches him in his most punchable face.
I hate seeing him on the field. I almost can't watch the Steelers when he plays. He's horrendous. But one thing that upset me about that game, first of all, I guess let's say, how great was it that we played all our backups and lost by 2 points?
Yeah. That's, now, granted, the Browns
has to give you confidence for the Steelers next week.
Browns are really hoping that they actually get to practice more than one day in a week and get a lot of their guys you're missing back to. But I get what you're saying.
Yeah, it's still you're playing Rudolph, Josh Dobbs, no T.J. Watt, no Cam Hayward. I mean, it was
offense kept most of the starters out there though, didn't they?
Everyone but the quarterback.
Yeah. Okay. So, like, the fact that the offense scored with some of the better receivers in the league, even Mason Rudolph's dumb face can throw the ball up and let Juju go get it, right?
Well, what bothered me about the game, what really bothered me about the game is that Mason Rudolph was throwing the ball downfield, and you were like, man, look how nice this offense looks when they push it. The underneath stuff opens up, and Ben did a little bit of that 2 weeks ago against the Colts, which you alluded to. I'm hoping we do that again. It is nice. I said it earlier with the Rams and Seahawks game. It's nice facing someone you know. And I think at the end of the day, Big Brother, you're going to Big Brother's house, because the Browns, their last two playoff appearances, guess who knocked them out? The Steelers.
Yep.
Don't think that bad juju's not sitting over their head. It's going to take a lot for them mentally to overcome that. And I think the Steelers are going to be ready to roll. A lot of what I said a couple weeks ago still holds true. I don't trust him at all. I thought they'd be a first round exit. But now that I see this draw, the only other team I would have liked to see is the Dolphins. Dolphins didn't make the playoffs. The right. Browns are the most gettable team. And Baker Mayfield, with a fragile mindset and the way he plays football, I gotta go with the Steelers here.
I just want to watch. You highlighted the play calling for Pittsburgh. Do they
let Ben call his own plays?
Do they let Ben cook, you know, to steal the let Russ cook thing? Do they let Ben cook? And if so, I think that I really like the Steelers.
Backyard Ben is the best Ben. Look what he always does in 2-minute drills. He's one of the best 2-minute architects of all time.
No doubt. Really. If they go back to everything's within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, all of a sudden that really opens up the door for Cleveland, I think, because then you're just breaking down. Maybe you get a turnover or two, and the running game still isn't much for Pittsburgh either. So it's really Ben or bust. And then for Cleveland, can Nick Chubb get going? Because everything, when Nick Chubb gets going, Cleveland's offense is very good. When he doesn't get going, or when he's not featured, which he's disappeared at times because, like, they'll just keep him on the sidelines. And I'm like, what are we doing? Yeah. He's your best player.
Yeah.
Give him the ball. I mean, that'd be like Tennessee, like, being like, hey, you know what? Whoever the hell the backup is at Tennessee running back, we're gonna feature this guy for a couple
Texas.
Of drives.
Foreman, maybe? No?
Who the hell cares? It doesn't matter.
He shouldn't be in the game.
Yeah, he's a complete non. He should be a complete non-factor. Derrick Henry should be getting every touch, and just like Nick Chubb, even though Alvin Kamara is very good, so you bring in Alvin Kamara as a change of pace guy. Feature Nick Chubb,
Kareem Hunt.
Kareem Hunt. Yeah, I'm getting my pass catching running backs from like the same draft class mixed up there.
But, oh yeah. Well, hey, listen, Nick Chubb is a guy that scares me. Jarvis Landry is a guy that scares me. But going into the week, the Browns probably feel the same way as far as a great deal of confidence in knowing that you're playing someone that you played already two times, and in fact, one game last week against them. So they're going to go in there with energy. They're going to be fired up. It's their first game ever as this team reaching the playoffs. Most of these guys on that team haven't been to the playoffs. I'd love to see how many actually have, even with other teams. But at the end of the day, the Steelers been there, done that. I think they get the win against the Browns.
Hey, a quick shout out to Kevin Stefanski as we wrap this thing up, though. 11 wins in his first season. That's more than as the head coach of the Browns. That's more than 7 Browns head coaches had in their entire Browns tenures. Since the team resumed play in 1999, only Butch Davis and Romeo Crennel won more games in their entire tenure, in their entire head coaching tenure, than Stefanski won this season alone. Goodness gracious, that speaks to how bad of a situation Cleveland has had, really, since they restarted the franchise after the original Browns moved. And goodness gracious. I'm happy for them. I don't necessarily think they win on Sunday, but I'm just glad for Browns fans, of whom I know quite a few because of where I went to school. And I mean, I saw a friend of mine throw away his Joe Thomas jersey during the NFL draft in 2009 because they traded down 3 times and took a center, Alex Mack. So, I mean,
that ended up being good.
Yeah. But like, you trade down 3 times and you expect like some splashy pick, and they took a center. And that was their only pick on the first day of the NFL draft. It's like, oh, jeez.
I hope you went in the trash can and grabbed the Joe Thomas
jersey.
I
was like, hey, you might want to go get that later.
But yeah, he's a good player. Don't blame it on Joe. Leave Joe out of this.
You're going to come out with a Turco trifecta that's related to this later on this week, these wild card matchups.
We're going
to
go ahead and do a opening week playoff, NFL playoff trifecta. And if I find a lock, I will lock it up and give you a lock of the week.
Okay. That's coming up on Twitter, so follow us on Twitter at sportsbar_pod, and you can get those Turco trifectas every week. I want to end with this, Alex, a Waller of the week. Can we make this Waller of the decade? Is it of the last decade or something? So Jason Lockenfora, affectionately known around
these
parts.
We got a lot of guys that are vying for that, so we should probably keep score.
We should have done, in hindsight, we should have done a Waller of the year at the end of the year because we had some great ones. Maybe because of it being the first year that we had this, we have to give it to Waller himself, David Waller, right? That was his name.
Well, he's the founder.
Yeah, he's the founder of the award, and that's how we gave this. So his great take about Seton Hall basketball, I think it was. I can't even remember the details of it now. It's now Seton
Hall basketball.
But he gets the inaugural Waller of the Year for 2020, and now we're taking submissions for 2021. But here's a good one. Jason LaCanfora, around these parts, affectionately known as Jason LaCanfora, the worst insider, quote-unquote, out there. I mean, literally right in like 5% of his takes all time. Like I'm talking about a dude that, like, this would be like Adam Schefter or no, not Adam Schefter. This would be like Pete Prisco coming out there and getting everything wrong. And then like still staying employed. Like, I don't get it. Like, he's really bad at his job and still has a job. So he got in a tussling match with Jaguars fans way back, like at the beginning of the last decade, and tweeted, and this resurfaced on January 1st of this year, so just a couple of days ago. June 19th, 2013. To be clear, this is his tweet. Because Jags fans seem to need help with this, I'd still consider Jacksonville a strong candidate for eventual move to London. Hit me back around 2021. Well, okay, to be fair, he put a little dash in front of 21. He could have meant, I guess, 30-21 or maybe 40-21 if we want to get super technical there. But it seems like he was referring to 2021. I just doing a date check for you here, Alex. It is the year 2021. The Jaguars are still located in Jacksonville. So thank you, Jason LaCanfora, for your service.
I'm glad that resurfaced, though, because the people that have those, what are they called? Ice, not the ice cold takes.
Old takes exposed. Yeah.
Yeah. Old takes exposed. Those always just come back to bite you in the ass.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are a lot of people that were tagging old takes exposed when this resurfaced just the other day. So that was fun. And with the amount of nonsense and BS that Jaguars fans have had to go through in this past year with the worst season in franchise history and a pandemic that prevents you from doing the kind of the only good thing surrounding this program, which is going down and tailgating and drinking plenty of beers before games and then having to deal with the Lot J nonsense and Shad Khan and so much of a mess. It's nice to sit there and look and say, you know what? Franchise is still here in Jacksonville. Guys like Jason LaCanfora are still stupid. And we can just take that and run with it here to start off this fantastic 2021.
Put them on. Go ahead. We'll start it. Me and you right now, we're starting a list.
Starting a list.
Put them on the list.
Yep.
And at the end of the year, we're going to vote for our Waller of the Week.
Yeah.
Of the year.
Waller of the year. Yeah, yeah. Something to look forward to in December of 2021.
So there, folks, is your first 2021 Waller of the Week.
And with that, I think we'll give somebody, all our fans, something to look forward to at the end of 2021. But so much to cover between now and then. We, again, say thank you for those of you that have joined us on this journey as we roll over the calendar into a new year with our first show of 2021. It was fun talking football. We hope that you all enjoy the big football weekend this weekend, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, with playoffs in the NFL, followed by the college football playoff final. And then, of course, we'll talk with you again on Tuesday to rehash all of it and keep moving you on. For Alex, I'm Scott. This has been another episode of the Sports Bar Podcast.